Former First Lady Nancy Reagan has written her memoirs. She writes, "During our White House years, I said almost nothing about how I really felt regarding the controversies that swirled around me. There were so many things that I longed to say, but couldn't. It just wouldn't have been appropriate." Her new book, My Turn, is co-written with William Novak. I spoke with Nancy Reagan from the NPR Bureau in New York and asked her about the best and worst parts of being out of the White House.
Well, the best part, I suppose, is not being quite so much under the microscope as you were as First Lady. The worst part is that you really do miss the friends that you made in Washington and the staff, wonderful, wonderful, the telephone operators, the butlers, the maids, everybody who'd been there for so long and who I still hear from, which is nice. You miss the support system. As I've said often before, I'll say it again, when you needed a plumber, you had a plumber right away.
There's really no job description for First Lady. How did your view of your job as First Lady evolve in the two terms that you were in the White House?
Well, no, there is no job description. And everybody, every First Lady, I think, makes it what she wants to make it. For me, the first year and a half, were very, very rocky years. But then I became so involved with the drug program that everything kind of then got better, and I was happier, and I didn't really pay. Well, I can't say I didn't pay that much attention, but my efforts were focused on other things.
You say the first couple of years were very hard for you. The syndicated columnist Ellen Goodman pointed out that you didn't seem to have the Teflon that your husband did. The press, for the most part, treated your husband very gently during those early years, yet you were often criticized in the press.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder why you thought that your press was so much more negative than your husband's.
I don't know. It's true. He didn't get the criticism that I got. First of all, it's very hard to dislike my husband. And maybe because they couldn't get to him, they got to me. And maybe I did things that if I'd known Washington better, I wouldn't have done at the time. You know, it's interesting that there are only two first ladies that I know of, anyway, who came to Washington without knowing Washington at all. I knew nothing, absolutely nothing.
Nancy Reagan is my guest, and she, by the way, has written a new memoir called My Turn. The issue that you took on while you were in the White House was the war on drugs, your Just Say No campaign. Why did you choose that as the issue?
Oh, when my husband was governor of California, and it began to surface, I began to get calls from friends whose children were on drugs, and many times tragically so, they died. But that was at a time when nobody knew anything about drugs. They were embarrassed about drugs. They were embarrassed to admit that their children or anybody they knew were on drugs. And that was when I started to get interested. So it was way back then. And then when I got to the White House, you have a wonderful platform that you'll never have again. And you really should use it if there's something that interests you.
Critics have said that the rhetoric of the Just Say No campaign was not matched by either political will or necessary funding in the Reagan administration. In fact, the Reagan administration cut money from drug rehabilitation programs as you were working on the Just Say No campaign. Did you ever feel that your husband or his administration was working at cross purposes to your anti-drug campaign?
No, I never did. My husband was as concerned as I was. I have often thought and said that I think that there should be more more working together between the East Wing and the West Wing. This has long been they just don't work together.
Explain what you mean there about the difference between the East Wing and the West Wing.
Well, the East Wing is the First Lady's wing, and the West Wing is my husband's wing.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you ever talk to your husband about how cutting drug rehabilitation programs would affect the war on drugs?
Well, you see, I don't think he did cut drug rehabilitation programs. We get into an argument here, but I don't think he did. Neither does he. And I think in the long run, I don't think that money is the solution to drugs. I think that education, teaching children when they learn to read and write about drugs, when they learn to read and write, then you should teach them about drugs. Do you know how the Just Say No slogan came into being, by the way?
Why don't you describe it?
I was in Oakland talking to some children, and one little girl said, "Well, Mrs. Reagan, what do you do when somebody offers you drugs?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. You just say no," never dreaming that it would be what it became. Actually, it was wonderful because it did provide a kind of a rallying point. It became part of our vocabulary, and now there are 15,000 Just Say No programs across the states. There's one in Japan, as a matter of fact.
You can correct me if I'm wrong here, but it always seemed to me that the Just Say No slogan was geared to young people who were up against peer pressure. And I was wondering if you thought that it was effective at all among either people who are a little older, among people who are already hooked, or among teenagers who are very poor, where there wasn't much hope of employment or money coming in.
Yes, I do. But then, of course, by the same token, I have to say, this is our biggest problem.
Which is the biggest problem?
The children who are in ghettos, who don't see any future for themselves. That's where the public service announcements come in, very handy. And people going to these schools or programs or whatever, who have been there and who know, and well-known people, I mean. And they identify with them, and hopefully, I mean, it's a long way around. The education program is a long way around. But believe me, if you closed every border, I don't mean that you shouldn't try to. I certainly do think so. And if you had a policeman on every corner, which I think would be wonderful. But in the long run, you have to take the customer away from the product. And that's what's going to save you, I think.
Your husband was criticized for what's been described as his thunderous silence on the subject of AIDS. His first AIDS address was in 1987, and the statistics that the journalist Randy Schultz offers is that by the time President Reagan made his first address, 36,058 Americans had been diagnosed with AIDS, 20,849 had died. Had you ever urged him to speak out sooner?
Well, he had appointed a commission to study the AIDS problem. My brother, as a matter of fact, in Philadelphia, was involved in that.
That commission was appointed after the Senate passed a unanimous resolution urging the president to appoint it.
You seem to be talking an awful lot about AIDS and drugs and not my book, but anyway. No, it was never a lack of interest. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you of all of the private things he did, but mm-hmm. He did a lot.
I've kind of figured that with your associations in the fashion world and in the acting world, that you probably know a lot of people who are gay.
Oh, yes?
And I was wondering if they ever urged you to urge your husband to speak out about AIDS and to speak out compassionately about the people who had it. Well, I mean, to speak out sooner and to speak out sooner and to emphasize the compassion instead of mandatory testing programs.
No, he did. I'm sorry, but he did. Whether it was reported or not, he did. I was there. He did.
One of the subjects you address in your new book, My Turn, is astrology. It was first revealed in Don Regan's book that you had hired an astrologer after the assassination attempt on your husband. Do you want to explain why you decided to use an astrologer then?
Have you read the book?
Yes. But why don't you explain it in your words, because I'm not sure our listeners have read it yet.
Well, I hope that's a very important thing, that they read the whole book and not just read excerpts, who tend to take just the buzz words and string them all together. To go through a shooting of your husband after only 3 months in Washington is an experience that I hope nobody has. It's a terrible, terrible experience. And he came very close to dying. I don't think most people knew that then. I don't think most people know it now. But there were two times that they came to me and said they couldn't find his pulse. And they couldn't find the bullet. He was very close to going into shock, and if he had, that would have been it. It was a terribly traumatic experience that does not leave you. And I went through a very rough period, a very tough period. And you reach out for any kind of a crutch that you can when you go through anything like this. And I reached out for my minister, my friends. And then when a friend called me and said, I know this lady who said that she had, if she'd only could have gotten to you, she could have told you that he shouldn't have done anything that day. And I thought, oh, my Lord. I could have saved him, maybe. And so I called her. And she became a crutch for me, along with other crutches.
Did your husband believe in astrology?
No.
Then how come he let you affect his schedule through the advice?
He did not. He didn't even know I was doing it. It's very hard to explain to somebody what this is like until you've gone through it. It differs from having cancer, which he did, I did. But being shot is something that's entirely different. I thought, well, if it meant changing, if he left at 2 o'clock, would he be safer than if he left at 4 o'clock? I didn't see anything wrong with it. Nobody was hurt. He's still alive, and I just didn't see anything wrong with it.
Did you ever ask for your own charts while you were consulting with the astrologer?
No, she just gave those to me.
Your charts?
My chart.
And how did they affect your schedule and the way you ran your life?
No, not I can't say. My concern was Ronnie.
So you didn't schedule your own day or week around your astrology charts?
No.
When did you give it up? Did you give it up?
I did. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. It, at the end, it really became more of a habit than, you know, a real need.
Nancy Regan is my guest, and she's written a new memoir called My Turn. I want to ask you about family. Ronald Reagan ran on a platform of traditional family values, and he was elected with the support of the moral majority. it seems to me that in a way you are from anything but a traditional family, in the sense that your parents divorced shortly after you were born. Your mother went on the road when you were very young, and you were brought up in those early years by your aunt.
Because she had to.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this. Please don't interpret it that way. President Reagan was the first divorced man to be elected president of the United States. It's nationally known that there have been periods when you've been on bad terms with your own children. Both Patty and Ron have at times lived out of wedlock with their lovers. I was wondering if you ever felt that your husband was asking Americans to buy into a vision of the American family that was very unlike the family you were from or the family you created.
No. He was giving his opinion and what he felt about what a family should be. It doesn't mean that every family turns out that way. Every family has problems. Every family. But when you try to solve those problems on the front pages of the papers, that's difficult.
Please understand, I'm not trying to criticize families for having problems. My question is more about this creation of an idealized family in which there are no problems.
No, I don't think that's what he would hope for, and that's what he believes in. I mean, whether you agree with that or not, I don't know, but he would hope for it. And I must say that our family now is, it was a very difficult 8 years because everything we did was magnified and on the front pages and misunderstood by both sides. But now it's all right.
I think some people felt that the Reagan administration, through presenting this this view of a traditional family, was creating policies that didn't take into effect the way families had changed, ways similar to what your family, how your family had changed. And I'm thinking here, you know, that there are families where there was working women or a single working mother, families in which there were unemployment, families that need daycare because both parents worked. This was the kind of family that was not really addressed in the Reagan administration. You didn't see an emphasis on daycare or an emphasis on single working mothers. And in fact, some of the services were cut back that would support families like
that. You keep talking about that, about that my husband cut back on everything. That is just not true. He believed strongly that there was too much government interference in family life, in family decisions. But this emphasis on cutting back programs is I'm sorry, it's not just not true. And I wish that, are you sure you read the book?
Well, I have read your book, but I mean, the Reagan administration did cut back many social service programs because...
Yes, because he felt there was too much government interference.
Right, so, but we're agreeing now that funds to many social service programs were cut back during the Reagan administration.
Some, because he felt there was too much government interference, and it could be done by privately.
Do you think it was done privately?
Yes, I do.
I know you don't get to walk through cities on your own very much because of security problems, but I know when I walk through New York or Philadelphia, the cities I live in or I'm closest to, I see homeless people on the streets of just nearly every major street. And it makes me wonder if volunteerism really worked. I wonder what you think about that.
No, I'm sorry. I think that volunteerism does work, and I think it is working. And, well, I don't know what you expect me to answer. I can't answer political questions. This is not a political book. I thought we were going to talk about my book and not about politics. And I'd be happy to talk about my book, but I'm not going to talk about politics. I'm sorry.
Okay. When you use the term family values, what do you mean by it?
I mean, I would like to see a closer family setup. I remember when I was growing up, and certainly when my husband was growing up, it wasn't unusual to see the mother and father and children and grandparents living in the same house. I think that's wonderful. But I think we've gotten away from that, and I think we should get back to it, and I think that'll be healthy for our country and for ourselves.
But it seems to me when you were growing up, you really weren't in it anyways. Your parents were divorced. Your mother was on the road as an actress. You grew up with your aunt. I mean, I guess what I'm wondering here is if you've created a nostalgia for something that you never quite lived through yourself, a nostalgia for something that perhaps didn't really exist.
No, it did exist. My mother was divorced when I was, well, just after I was born. She did not take alimony, and she had to go back to work. And she didn't think that hauling me around from town to town would be of any help to me. And so I lived with my aunt and uncle in Bethesda, Maryland, my cousin, her sister, which was a very loving, wonderful household. I miss my mother.
Well, we're out of time. I thank you very much for talking with us. Thank you.
You're welcome.